So there's a few things I want to say as we get started. First of all, anybody on this panel could probably hold court. And let's give it up for all the people that came before us. Second thing I want to say is the legendary Rakim in the building. How you doing, brother?
The God MC, come on, man. I'm rated R.
All right. So, I wanted to kind of say a few things for us to think about. First of all, a tool is only as powerful as the people that use it. It could be a tool for liberation, or it could be a tool for oppression. Second thing I want to say is that technology is oftentimes reflective of culture. So if you are somebody who has some anti-black, anti-brown type of ideology, it's going to be reflected in your culture, in the type of technology that you use. If you're talking about upliftment and sharing and doing all that, it's going to be reflected in your technology. The last thing I want to say is that hip-hop, now I'm going all the way back to the 70s when I got started, and I think it's important to remember why we started doing this art form, what it was about. For many of us, it was an escape. It was a way for us to build something when things were being taken away. It built community and it built everlasting bonds. And many of us said, as we evolved and got into this thing called the music industry, that we would transform the music industry. And that's questionable, considering that transformation means that you bring your values to the table. I would argue that the music industry, which is about individualism, which is about exploitation, which is about how you can get over, how you can be a gatekeeper, versus building community, is the way that it operates. The ethos has always been sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and here we are in 2025, and it's black death, black dysfunctionality, black criminality, black hatred. Those are things that there are entire ecosystems in this industry about. So if we're talking about hip hop, I want to look at these folks here who I think have represented not only innovation, but community, a willingness to think forward above and beyond just the tools at their disposal, and they're a continuation of the marriage that we've long had with technology. So from day one, hip hop was technical. If we're talking about Kool Herc learning from John Brown and coming up with the merry-go-round and isolating breakbeats to Grand Wizard Theodore to Grandmaster Flash coming up with the clock theory, that's technology. If we're talking about just bring it closer to home, our dancers right here, the Jerry Rentes and the Black Messengers and the Bigelow Bills and all the B-boys that we might have known and seen in New York, that was technology when they were looking, figuring out how they can contort their body. That required technique, that required study, that required discipline, that required all these things. And to reduce it to just saying, oh, they're just artists, that's some bullshit. That's reducing them while everybody else is elevated for being a study. So people were studying martial arts and the whole nine. If we're looking at graffiti, and I'm being intentional by showing all aspects of this culture, it was criminalized. Yet we have ad executives who looked and said a 13-year-old or 14-year-old in the dark of night with no technology except their imagination managed to beautify an entire train, right? Managed to put their name up on a building. Now you have ad executives who soak that cultural expression up, and they turn what we were criminalized into doing, saying, oh, that's a rap. I remember when I first saw the Star Wars ad on a rap wrapped around a bus, and they were like, oh, the ad executive, he's innovative. And I'm like, but what about all the graph artists, some of them who went to jail for doing the same thing, right? With no art lessons, figuring out how to take a spray can and do some imaginative stuff. That's technology. Is this making sense what I'm saying? Looking at the role of the DJs, right? So back in the days, going back to Herculaneum, they were building their own sound systems and naming them the Gladiator, Herculoids, Sasquatch. If we come all the way out here to the Bay, there's a whole line of people from your Mind Motions and Pirate DJs to your original DJs to your CJ Flashes. We can, my man Danny Dorman, a whole bunch of people that we can talk about who we all built our sound systems. And we didn't go to school for electronics, so I remember we were joking, building my speakers and it burning at a party. You know, literally, like, your shit caught on fire. But because we were community, there were people that came along and said, let me show you how to really do this. That's different than the music industry. Let me show you how you can take it to the next level. And I want us to keep that in mind. And I can go all the way down and just show all the different iterations from the days that we had scratch conventions right here, where people were studying that, to the days that Ankh Marketing, when they were going to the San Francisco Music Tech, and they were bringing crowds into that space, and folks were like, what are y'all doing? How can we soak up game? And then maybe executing that, but that was technology from us, our imagination being institutionalized. Is this making sense what I'm saying? We got to own the things that we create and not have anybody reduce it and say, oh, that's just some people doing something. Even the MCs, whether it's Stickman or KRS-One, who have a whole thing about how to study that, or Rakim, who's building off of the traditions of beboppers who were creating something out of, you know, being technologically proficient, that's science right there. And so I want to kind of come in that spirit and make sure that we understand that this is a continuation of our innovative process, and then talk with these gentlemen to show you how they're trying to take it to the next levels. So again, give it up to them. I want to start off with you, Divine. You and Rakim co-founded a company called Notes. And in the spirit, we were just talking the other day, in the spirit of helping, in the spirit of giving community, in the spirit of not gatekeeping, but letting people know the game, why don't you explain what you all were doing with your, with this new company and your use of technology?
Yeah, thank you. I mean, Notes, at the core of Notes, it's empowerment. You spoke to empowerment and how we, you know, how these gatekeepers have for years kept us out or controlled certain things, the aspects of our careers as artists and creators. You know, it's about decentralization of knowledge and information and dismantling a system that has worked, pretended to work for us, but has really worked against us at the highest level, especially when you think about IP, how it's controlled, years of being, you know, being in servitude, quote unquote, for these labels. And, you know, they getting a lion's share with what you make. You know, you got to go on the road to get busy, to get your money. You know, just the whole lopsidedness of that whole industry, even before hip-hop, you know, it's been going on for generations, man. And Notes is here to solve that. You know, solve that long-standing problem that's existed in the music industry and just dismantle that and let these artists know and these creators know that they can become empowered. And that's what Notes is all about. You know, three core pieces of that is music, money, and knowledge. And how do we empower these artists through each of those things, you know?
Talk a little bit about how exactly you're using technology. You know, in this case, we've been talking about AI, but anything you want to add to that?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, you think of music, you think of this traditional, you know, distribution channels, things of that nature. But we also look at money. We're building technology that actually analyzes an individual's entire financial DNA, every part of that. So beyond, you know, beyond a FICO, because a FICO is a snapshot of the past. And someone may be in a position to prove their ability to pay, you know, beyond what their FICO says. So we have technology that analyzes that and proves out their ability to pay so that we can get them funded for their projects, so forth and so on. And then when you think about the knowledge piece, you know, leveraging AI, different LLMs, and bringing that to play, how do we empower individuals about being aware? You know, a lot of these individuals are young now in the industry. They really don't know, you know, what the contract entails. They just ready to sign it away because they see the glitter and the gold, and they just ready to get inside the Benz or whatever, you know, and get the gold chains and all that. But, you know, that's been a pattern that's been going on for so long. You know what I mean? So, you know, when Rakim was talking about paid in full, it was beyond just the money. It was just beyond the material gain of being paid in full. It was about the knowledge. It was about, you know, the respect. It was about, you know, you being somebody at your highest level, being the epitome of your craft and your art. You know what I mean? That's really being paid in full. And that's really why Notes is all about empowering these artists on every level.
Appreciate that. Let's give it up for Divine one time. Rakim, let me bring you in. I started off by talking about technical prowess. And when you first came out, a lot of people had to study your game. You know, you had to study how he doing his rhymes. And I want people to remember that that was actually the case. People were listening to those records and trying to figure out how he got his flow. It was a commitment to excellence in a whole other way. And I'm saying this very intentionally because we're at a point in time when history is being erased. That's why I wanted to give a little bit of it here. We're also at a time where, remember this if anything, institutions remember, people forget. I'll say it again, institutions remember, people forget. So institutions will document this and remember it and then take and pick what they want, and they'll tell us this history doesn't matter. And so I think it's important to not only give flowers for your innovativeness, but also having interviewed him a few times, you've been very clear about your lineage in terms of an MC. So maybe you can share that in the technological aspect of that, because I want us to own that sort of aspect and expand what the definition of technology means.
Yes, sir. Peace and love, everybody. It's been a long journey, man. I don't want to reveal my age, but
he is 25 years old, ladies and gentlemen. 25 years old. Let's give it up for Rakim. 25 years old.
But you know, we were talking about this a few days ago, man. I remember writing rhymes and literally had to go to the library to research what I was saying. Let me, if I want to say something, you know, it has some substance and some meaning. You had to go to the library. And from then to now, you look at the difference, you know, the kids got the world, you know, at their fingertips. So we watch how technology, you know, change from, you know, time to time. But as an artist, you know, coming up when, you know, we didn't have that access, you know what I mean? It was from the heart. So being that we have this technology today, you know, AI, we want to be careful that it don't interfere with what we feel is sacred. And it's not just rap, because we understand, you know, when we grew up to R&B music, what it meant to us, you know what I mean? This was music for people's soul. And it's the same thing, you know, we want to continue. We don't want AI to interfere with that aspect of what we're doing here. You know what I mean? AI is just going to be a tool to help young artists figure out their money situation. You know what I mean? We have young artists that may have an opportunity out in California, but they can't get there. So this platform, you know, we can help young artists kind of be a little more independent and give them a little freedom to be great, man. But you know, watching, you know, the game from where I'm at now, man, it's beautiful to see the technology grow. From DJs having carry around 200 crates of records, this thing we got now called Serato. All he needs is a laptop and a flash drive, you know what I mean? Which is good. So we gonna, you know, make sure we hold on to what's important. But we wanna make sure, especially that our hip hop artists, you know what to leave alone, man. You know what I mean? So, you know, we wanna stay true to what we're doing. But at the same time, what me and Devine is trying to do here is trying to create a vehicle that can help artists, you know, be all they can be. We're gonna be informal with the AI, you know, they can ask, you know, questions and you know, you'll be basically speaking to me and I'll be answering the questions. But we wanna be informal with the AI but not being involved in the creative process.
Let me ask you a question, and I'm going to bring it over to Sway and then Rennie here. You talked about the discipline of going to a library and the discipline of really taking time. That's what you're known for writing your rhymes. And I would say there's no shortcuts with Rakim. There's no shortcuts with Devon. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think the warning that I hear you giving, and I'm just going to put on my professor hat and seeing that there are students that figure they can write an essay in 5 minutes and be done. I fail them, you know, because I could tell it's a microwave essay and not a home-cooked meal, right? And it's important that we have that because that's a foundation, right? That's a discipline of being able to struggle with this information, decipher it, and think for self. Otherwise, you won't have the ability to think. And if you could talk a little bit about the process of bringing your A game as an MC, the process of making sure that you struggle with being your best, which oftentimes is people looking for shortcuts.
So I was just trying to, I guess, use what I had and not let what I didn't have, you know, discourage me, I guess.
Let's give it up one more time. And what I'm hearing here, and I think as a cautionary tale, we don't ever want to truncate or lose our imagination. We want to be able to imagine things into reality, the way that you were able to flip those rhymes. Let me bring Sway on, and there's a million things I could ask you, because we go way back, but a couple of things with your crew. I talked about community, and that was core with hip hop, building a community, having a team. It was never just one individual. Might be one individual who you see, but it was always a team, and I think you all personified that. When I talked about values, I talked about everybody's expected to bring their A game to the table at all times. And A game means being knowledgeable about all the tools that are in front of you. And so, you know, your partner, King Tech, nicknamed King of Technology, and somebody who was known as the Wizard before he was King Tech, was a dancer. And I remember talking with him, and he's like, man, I'm studying these dance moves. Like, I'm trying to figure out how they're doing double, you know, I mean, you know, he was a student, and you as well as an MC. Can you talk about the Sway and King Tech empire, if you will, and the type of A game you bring and how you have danced with technology? And let me just give you a little bit behind the scenes. When KML was at his best, it was all of us as mixers and DJs, and Sway and King Tech were the program directors at this station, right? It's important to know that behind the scenes, they were the ones that was really having to study a lot of the stuff that was going on. And A-Game was top of mind. So let's talk a little bit about your dance and journey with technology in the A-Game.
First of all, thank you. Davey D is my mentor. So this is what he's not mentioning. Well, yeah, I don't know if everybody know where Davey D lives, right? Off of MacArthur Boulevard, you know, Lake. Oh, all right. I went to Oakland High, so I used to run down that hill to go to the lake and do track practice and the whole nine. I was a part of organized sports. But before I start, I love this dude right here. Right? Man, I love this guy. He know I love him, man. And he was always, what you're saying about basically staying true to yourself, you know, as we go through this digital evolution and technological evolution, staying true to yourself, being authentic, integrity, you know, commitment, loyalty, all of these principles to me were the intangible elements of the culture that we picked up at a young age. So to get to your question, Davey, we growing up in East Oakland, I didn't grow up alone. Like I grew up off of 23rd Ave, so we needed each other to get through the day. You know, whether we're playing the dozens, whether we're playing basketball, and we challenged each other. My cousin Chuck, you know Chuck, my brother T. Calloway, my good friend Al Ski, we challenged each other. And so we pushed each other to be the best. I'm better than you on the court. I'm taking you. Football, track, video games, right? Everything. So when the Commodore 64 came out,
you going back there. Does anybody know what the Commodore 64? That was a good album with Lionel Richie. I love them. And I wasn't born when that happened, so I think it's Lionel Richie in the Commodores,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so, and we in the Commodore, you had, remember you had the floppy disk?
Oh,
right?
Wow.
So you had floppy disk back then, and so that was, and you had to code your own games back then. And so we had to learn code on our own as kids. That was our first introduction to advanced technology as kids. So you had organized sports. I played with the Oakland Dynamites. I ran for Oakland High. I ran at Merritt College. You had this protection, this bubble we built for ourselves to protect ourselves from the perils of society growing up in Oakland. And then a movie called Wild Style came out, right? And then a movie called Wild Style came out. So you talking Style, I'm sorry, Style Wars came out. That went too deep when I said Style Wars. That was a graffiti movie. And then Wild Style came out, and everything that those movies gave us, we carried, right? You know, people wanted to be the best on stage. They wanted to have the illest clothes. Crews were incredible, whether it was the Rocksteady crew or you was one of the Herculoids or whatever crew you was a part of, that was important. Fast forward, when Tech and I met as teenagers, he was a part of a crew called Flynamic Force. And I was a part of my crew in Oakland. And a good friend of ours introduced us, Al Ski, who grew up running track. The point I'm making is it was always fellowshipping. It was always, we were always surrounded by team. And so when we sat down and had the idea we were going to become a rap group called Flynamic Force, Tech brought a bunch of his friends. I brought a bunch of my friends. He told me, this guy, Dave Fortune, plays drums. This guy over here, Rick, he plays keyboards. This guy, I didn't know if they played or not, but to your point, we formulated a crew. That formulation protected us. It kept us on our square. We checked each other the whole nine. And so when Tech stopped breaking, breaking had lost its appeal for a second, I think when they danced at the Ronald Reagan inauguration, back then, we felt like it was a sellout, right? And breaking started taking a downfall, so we transitioned into artistry. But you could go to Pier 39 and see brothers carrying cups, right? And the same attitude we took. We created a company called All City Productions. That was out of my mother's house, you know, in East Oakland on 23rd Ave. I studied. I learned how to trademark the name. I just looked it up. I learned how to make it into an official business. I got a phone that was in my bedroom in the back of my mother's house. We made demos initially. We bought a sequential drum processor and a four-track. We didn't buy it. We rented it. Tech's mom gave us some money. Tech's role was, you got to learn that. You know, I'm going to write rhymes, you know. And we got to learn. We didn't have money to go in the studio to record, so we did it in his house in Hayward. You know, everybody in the crew had a role. I became kind of like the business guy. And so when we couldn't get record deals with Fresh Records, Def Jam, all the same people you probably hope to get deals with, by no means am I comparing myself to you, God MC, but, you know, we got these similar paths we walked, and so something activated in us to do it ourselves, right? And so I studied, learned about distribution, All City, Walter and those guys, City Hall Distribution, CRD Distribution, T.Y. Uzi's Creative Music, you know, Upstairs Records, all these dudes did consignment deals. And in doing that, we had to learn how to press up records. And we went to Rainbow Records, I think it was in Berkeley at that time, to learn how to press up the lacquer and the cassettes. And this whole time, we're pushing ourselves to be the best at it. Tech practiced for a whole year how to scratch. Every day, he was on the turntables, on the techniques, trying to learn how to scratch. We needed to graduate. The SB 1200 came out. Emu is right here in Santa Cruz. We didn't know that Emu was just a big brand that was making all the keyboards and the SB 1200. That's right here in Santa Cruz. So me and Tech one day just drove to Emu and thought we was going to be able to go in the front office and buy an SB 1200. It didn't work like that. But we eventually saved money and we was able to, you know, SB 1200s allowed you to sample like 10 seconds of sampling at that time was fucking, freaking amazing. And each step along the way, Dave, we learned more. We didn't have a record deal and we started doing it ourselves. Distribution, production, studio. We used to work out of Artivere Studio in San Francisco. It was a 16-track, 2-inch reel. Analog studio, that's the same place that Green Day used to record. We learned how to build, we learned about studio technology, how to engineer the board. I didn't know those skills would transfer when I got to KML, and now I'm engineering the board when we're doing the wake-up show, or we're doing the 10 o'clock bomb, and all of these things. So having a crew kept everybody accountable, pushed everybody.
We needed that push, that, you know, that extra family, that camaraderie. But like you said, everybody played off each other, and man, we wanted to be better every day. Even if sometimes we would challenge each other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Sometimes somebody might come to the table with dope rhyme and be like, oh, okay.
So here's what I just want us to take from this is learning some fundamentals. Having a strong foundation, having community to keep you accountable, a commitment to learn. So everything he's saying, we had to learn over and over again. I'm saying this now because from my experience, and I can give my whole resume about being in this space, but we go back to the early days, you know, when we were doing rap.com and hiphop.com, but we're talking about 92, 93, right? And the point I'm being is that these were our peers, and then one day, society elevated the people in Silicon Valley to be gods and the rest of us to be people who needed to follow them versus, no, we all in the same camp. We got just as much imagination and just as much intelligence as they do. Programming is not the only thing that meets technology. It's the social aspect. It's the attitude. It's the commitment. It's all these things. And if we don't know that lesson, then we're taking on a different value system that says just making money at all costs is the goal versus are you liberating and uplifting your community? Because right now, technology is being used to fuck us up. If you don't believe me, look what they're doing with ICE. And if I go back, I could show you files of the police who have looked at your rhymes and have looked at the rhymes of all these MCs, and they studied the lineage in which they came from. I've seen those files, I have those, pages of them, right? So they're studying culture, and I'll just leave it with this. There's an FBI guy named Dart Hart Perry, you can see it online. And his job was to dismantle black cultural organizations. It showed up on ABC TV under a guy named Gil Noble. And he said, our job was to, he said, in order to understand the people, you gotta understand their culture. And once you understand your culture, you can use the culture against the people. That's the FBI in 1970. I don't think that stopped. If people are sitting here saying the end goal is just to get the technology at all costs and fuck everybody else, then you took on the values of Western culture, the music industry, and not what I think hip hop has been about. That's why we're doing this type of forum. So I appreciate you walking us through that. Even though it's not exactly AI, if you don't have that foundation, you can use AI for tremendous harm. Let me bring in Reza worked with us at KML, and you're part of a company called Gamma. And the founder of that, or co-founder, is Larry Jackson. Larry Jackson's from here, went to Reardon High. And when we was at the station, he was 15 years old, calling up when we was on the morning show.
He was cutting school, too.
What was that?
He used to cut school to do his late night shift.
That's right. That's right. He did, yes.
We used to make him go to school, him and Franzen.
Yeah. Right? Well, I bring that up because here's a guy that would call up, and he was playing with keyboards and doing technology then, trying to get on the air, trying to take it to the next level. Next thing you know, he's the one that's running Apple Music for a number of years and then starting his own company, right? And so that's major props right there. That's homegrown. That's somebody that didn't get the formal education, but like the sister over here, X, was, you know, self-taught and figured it out. And that's important because we have that within us. Let's talk about Gamma, you know, and how you all hooked up and what you're trying to do with this new technology and why it's important.
Yeah, thanks, Davey. And first of all, I'm humbled seeing this. Legends are right here. And funny story, you were talking about ICE as an immigrant from Iran coming here in 79, you know, listening to Sugar Hill Gang, going to Adams Junior High in Richmond. I didn't really understand or love the, yeah, Richmond shout out. I didn't really understand the culture till I heard I Ain't No Joke. And that's when I fell in love with hip hop, understood what the culture was. And so, I mean, always number one on my top five. So it's an honor to be on it. And even more so with my alumni here, Sway and Davey and you know, Supreme in the audience and Flash and Russell. It's just a lot of incredible people in KML Radio that came up together. So it was amazing to see. But, you know, Larry started off in the back room, and it tells you, you know, kind of lets you know that you always treat everybody with respect, because coming up as a young account executive that I was coming up in, and Larry working the back room, you know, I try to get him gigs at clubs and $200 in his pocket at the Beehive here, and here we are, fast forward 25 years later, and he's one of the more powerful people in music and running his own company and doing what it does, and you know, I'm over there as the chief revenue officer. So what we try to do is empower artists to do more than just make music, right? And as Rakim knows and Sway knows, making, you know, recorded music doesn't make you money anymore. So it's what can you do, what revenue streams can you create? So with, you know, Snoop Dogg, we created a jewelry line. And it's not an artist just slapping his name on something, it's actually him creating a line with a very famous jeweler who had a $1 billion jewelry business and collaborating together and creating a multi-million dollar business in jewelry, and Snoop using, you know, obviously his iconic figure in music, but to create revenue a different way, or one of our artists now, Mariah Carey, doing the same thing in fragrance. So it's consistently trying to develop and create opportunities for these artists and let them be entrepreneurs, you know, kind of, you know, Rick Ross is a perfect example, one of our artists. He's taken equity in businesses instead of just taking the bag, and he takes a thing like Bel Air, and now he's making $350 million when the company hits $3 billion. So,
how do you all use technology to enable that?
So we have Vidya, which is our distribution channel, and we're the only, you know, outside of, and a shout-out to Ghazi and Empire and what they do, but we do something similar, except we pay our artists on a biweekly or a monthly basis where they can actually see the streams and see what they're making. And one of the things, Larry was really instrumental in Snoop and Spotify kind of re-resurrecting that you know, relationship. And now you've seen Spotify stock go up, but Snoop was very outspoken about streams and how he's getting paid. And, you know, we help kind of rectify that by bringing transparency for artists. And that's the big thing for why Larry started this company is for the artist and about the artist. And why the G is small, because it's not about Gamma, it's really about the artist. So that's a lot of the things we try to do and accomplish, and technology is a part of it, but listening to what Rakim was saying to Sway, like, AI is big, right? Like, we can do licensing, we can do a lot of cool stuff, but the thing about AI is it has no emotion, right? It can't tell you the feeling you have when you hear a song or when you create a song. It still takes people to create. It takes people to put passion and creativity behind it. Yes, I can, you know, go on ChatGPT and say, hey, write me a hip-hop song, but can I make it like it ain't no joke, you know, I ain't no joke, or something like that? You can't. It doesn't have the same passion. So it's how you use technology to better yourself, how you use technology to be efficient, but it'll always take a human to really control how that works.
Again, a tool is, give it up for him. A tool is only as good as the people that use it and how you use it. Divine, I want to come back with you. And I want to build off the fact that oftentimes the ingenuity and some of the most imaginative things come out of the other side of the track, if you will. It comes from the people that are down in the bottoms, who when they do it, they're criminalized. And the example I always use is Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs. When they started, they basically figured out a way to create a mousetrap that would allow you to make free phone calls, long-distance phone calls, and they were praised for it. They were nurtured, right? They were held up as people who are innovative. But you get somebody else who does that, who cracks your iPhone or something. I think there was a guy who did, and they get arrested, and they're criminalized and sent to jail. It's wire fraud. So a lot of times, some people are nurtured for doing things, and other people are criminalized. And there's a whole industry in the Silicon Valley where we've seen it. Remember Uber and Lyft? They were doing things without a permit, if you remember that, right? And then they asked for permission. They said, well, these are innovative people, et cetera, et cetera. But when we tinker around with our cars and do those things, and again, that's technology, people want to have task force and want to criminalize us versus saying, how can we nurture that creativity and take it to the next level? I say all that not to boohoo us, but to say that we need to recognize that talent and that creative ingenuity in folks who are often demonized. So I wanted to bring you up because you did time. You know, you're one of those folks that they might have looked at and said, let's write them off, and here you are with notes. Talk a little bit about the down and out, the folks that are often overlooked, the imaginative way, the creative way, the ingenuity that you and others have brought to the table. How do we harness that? How do we recognize it? And how do we as a community see the brilliance versus the demonization?
Yes, that's a, yeah. I was incarcerated early age, teenage years, spent 10 years in federal prison. You know, I lost total hope, you know, what my life was gonna become, but I always had this belief in myself, always knew I was destined for something greater than just being incarcerated. You know, 10 years ago, I was blessed to come across an individual I read about while in prison, came home, reached out to him on Twitter at the time, asked him to mentor me, and it changed my life forever, put me on a trajectory for certain success. But going back to the incarceration piece, a lot of those brothers in there was very, very, you know, innovative in their approach to a lot of different things, you know, because, you know, you don't have everything you want when you're locked up. In this day and time, you know, everybody inside got access to cell phones, so you really seeing what's going on front and center on TikTok, on Instagram, and all that, these things these guys are doing inside. You know, I'm looking at some of the stuff like, wow, I'm still blowing my mind about it, you know? But at the end of the day, you know, you can't ever give up on anybody because we all have this potential in us to be something great, all of us. You just got to believe in yourself, and you got to tap into that, man, and bring it to the forefront. And, you know, it's never easy. Like Ron said, you know, going to the library, going through the books, looking for the words. You know, I'm sure you had plenty of other things you wanted to do, play football. You know what I mean? But, you know, it's those painstaking moments in life that you go through to shape yourself and to shape your path and your direction, you know, to get to reach that greatness. And I never thought I would be even sitting on here with Ra, with Sway. I just never thought that wasn't in my life plans or what I wanted to do. At the time, I wanted to be an MC. I met Sway back at Jack the Rapper back in the day. Then we linked up at an organization that was helping people who were incarcerated come home and get in the technology industry. You know what I mean? Years later, he totally forgot he met me. I was like, yo, hold on, I'm going to pull that picture up. Pull the picture up, and then me and him started a dialogue. And now here we are again, you know? I haven't seen a brother in been like 10 years, you know what I mean? 10 years. And now we on the same panel. And Ra, what can I say about Ra, man? What enough ever been said about Ra, and you probably heard it all. But, you know, Ron, man, Ron's that dude, man, always been that dude, always someone I've admired from afar, always felt one day I would connect with him and build with him, but not in this way. You know, when I first connected with Ron, it was more of an artistry thing. I was doing music. But then it just morphed into, you know, business and just me being someone who supported him from afar and whatever I could do just to, you know, bless this brother in any way I could with what I had going on, I always did. And it finally culminated, you know, a few years ago. And then, you know, I just had this idea, like, what if I could productize Ryan a different way with technology? You know what I mean? Put his brain in this technology, you know, this AI, and do it the right way. Do it based on what Ryan's principles are, what he stands for, you know, originality, integrity, putting that work in, you know what I mean? You know, fine-tuning yourself, become one of the best that ever did it. Like, you know, so wow. This moment for me is like really full circle in a lot of ways. So I'm grateful for, you know, to be here. But, you know, yeah.
Yo.
Let me say one thing before I come to you, Ra. Because we're talking about community, and he talked about mentorship, right? And I want to keep coming back to that because we're in a time when they tell us it's about individualism. And so you got, you know, Kimberly Bryan, who started Black Girls Code, right? Remember, we had Hack the Hood. That was a big project. You had Angela Benton from Streamlytics. Of course, you have I, that was this year, and the work that she was doing at Google and all that. Quincy Phillips, Q, with Silicon Valley Lighthouse. You have Idris Sandu from Spatial Labs. Blair Evans, who's a revolutionary cat out of Detroit, who's doing Fab Labs and digital fabrication, teaching people how to own the means of your production, right? These are names that you might not see or hear, but these are names that we need to know because they're on the ground doing it. Chance the Rapper and Lupe Fiasco were also in that space early on. And, you know, there's a whole team of people whose names I don't always know that are, you know, all up in the YouTube space, right? So there's a lot of us in these things, and it's important for us to connect. So, Ra, I want you to jump in and say what you wanted to say, but I also want to ask you, what's the most technological thing that you've ever seen as a hip-hopper that you like, man, that blew me away, or what would you like to see technology take this craft to?
Well, no. There you go again, trying to make show my age, Steve. But you know, I seen a lot of different things, man. You know, from, you know, he was speaking on the SB 1200. You know what I mean? I remember I got my SB 1200 might have been 86, but like you said, it was only like 8 to 10 seconds of sample time.
Yeah.
Years later, I got this machine called the ASR-10. It had 5 minutes of sample time. So, you know, I remember, you know, technology when, you know, we was learning how to work with them 8 seconds. We used to speed the record up, sample it. So, you know, instead of, you know, the record playing slow, speed it up. Now the 10 seconds seemed like 20 seconds. So we found different ways, which was us tricking the technology or using it for what we wanted it for, you know what I mean, to make it work for us. And that's the key. But I seen that, you know what I mean? I seen, you know, studios go from, you know, slide the volume up and turn the button to self-slide the fingers, you know what I mean? I got a screen in my studio now. I can test the screen and press record. I just touch the screen. So, you know, I came from watching a little SB 1200 screen this big that just had numbers on it to seeing the whole world on the screen, you know what I mean? So, you know, technology ain't good when you, you know, use it the right way, man. So, you know.
Sway, you've been around the world. What have you seen, you know, in different places that has blown your mind technology-wise?
First of all, the way Rakim said that about the small screen to seeing the world, that was a bar. I think, Dave, there was a point when I was working at MTV and I was very invested in MTV, you know, and for years I put in a lot of work and was really trying to put hip-hop on that platform in the right way. And There was a year where MTV, I didn't feel appreciated what I brought to them, and in negotiation, it wasn't favorable, so I ended up quitting for about 6 months. It was a hard 6 months, but I had so much belief and faith in myself and my crew that I knew it was their loss. But at the same time, YouTube was becoming a thing, right? And I had traveled over to France, and I was, there's a artist by the name of, I was in London actually, and there was an artist by the name of Sway, and he was in the studio, and these guys were on a YouTube channel, right? And I just couldn't grasp what was happening. I was like, wait, what is this? He was like, this is YouTube, and you could post video. Really? Okay. So I took that back to New York, and I was trying to explain to everybody, man, we don't have to do this with MTV. All these great ideas we're doing, Hottest MCs, this My Block series, these shows we were doing, Hard Rhymes, Big Stakes, all of this IP we were giving them, we can do it ourselves. And it inspired me to start the YouTube channel, Sway's Universe, right? Because I didn't want to be beholden to MTV like that. And I also wanted to prove a point that you're just a platform, you're not the end all be all. And so, and then I, at the same time in negotiating that deal, SiriusXM approached me, you know. And this is now satellite radio. We're used to terrestrial radio, right? We did syndication through terrestrial radio. And that's the signal bounces off a satellite that orbits around the planet. You know, I've never been in orbit, but that's what they tell us, right? where terrestrial is a ground thing, where it's a tower and you got limitations. And so I start playing the YouTube channel off of the radio show, playing a radio show off of the YouTube channel. And by the time I came back, when I renegotiated the deal, it was because it was around the time Jay-Z and Nas got together for Def Jam after their beef, and they wanted me to do the interview, right? And so I said, well, do the deal, I'll do the interview. So we did the interview, I came back to MTV, but what I realized, and I say this to you all, I would interview people on MTV, and then I would interview people on my morning show. I might get a million something views from my morning show. I wasn't getting the same volume at MTV at one point. And then I realized it wasn't MTV, it's me, right? And when it comes to technology and AI, King Tech and I have always embraced it, never been scared of it. Like Rakim is saying, it's how you use it. It's how I heard of somebody on the panel say, it's not the mechanism, it's the person that's programming it. And I would encourage each and every one of you to really learn about it, whether you hate it, love it, or whatever, learn about it. By knowing these technologies, it helped us stay afloat, and our main goal has always been to give back. So we ran our platforms on giving back, opening doors, creating opportunities, doing this right under their noses or right in front of their face. It didn't matter, you know. And so going around the world, watching people connect online, I think people doing studio sessions from different continents, you know, that part of technology is what really excited me. And then learning how to utilize it in our everyday processes, but not forgetting ourselves in the process. I'm from the Bay, right? Y'all know what that means. You know, there are no limitations. You know, they can't copy Rakim. The machine can never be Rakim. But it's important that you always be yourself, right? Because there's nobody else who can be you in this process. So I think YouTube was a big right. asset I was able to use.
I know that we got to wrap up. Let me just say one thing that I got out of this, and I think this is crucial. Part of technology is also owning your own shit. And we've talked about this, and what Sway is really talking about with this flip and flop, and I did a similar thing when I was programming at these things, is like, let me have my own studio and do the shit in my house, so these interviews are my interviews, right? Yeah. And so he owns his stuff, and if I remember correctly, mm-hmm. when they realized that you was getting all this stuff, they were coming to you like, how can we be down? And I think you always like, this is our shit.
Yeah,
and that's important because a lot of times the game is to make you think that these folks who are technically coming from our neighborhoods are somehow gods and goddesses when they're soaking up our stuff. I wonder if Apple would have blown up with their iPads or iPods if they hadn't used music, in particular hip-hop. Was hip-hop the seller or was it, you know, the device? I think it was the music more than anything, or beats, or any of these other things. And so we got to make sure we own a lot of the things that we create, and I think you have been a model for that.
Yeah, that's proprietorship is important. I'm not going to hog this mic. I'll give you an example. I worked at MTV 20 years, I'm sorry. I was in New York 25 years, but I worked at MTV 20 years. And in the digital age, when they caught up and start configuring old programming, I saw myself in a lot of documentaries, hip-hop documentaries everywhere, DMX, whoever. I'm all over these documentaries. I have no proprietorship. I get no residuals. You see me in a documentary, you just see my spirit bouncing, you know, in perpetuity, looking at me like, dog, we're not even getting paid for this, right? That's a lesson learned, right? That'll never happen again, and it shouldn't happen to you, you know?
And Sway, one of the things we talk about at Gamma, because, you know, we're not WME, we're not CAA, we're not trying to be an agent, we're trying to build businesses with people, right? Let people be entrepreneurs, and ownership is really the key, right? We want to give back to our neighborhoods. We want to give back to our communities. You can't do that chasing a bag. You got to be an owner. You got to really have equity. You got to take chances. You got to bet on yourself. And it's not about slapping your name on something and endorsing like you see a million influencers do. It's really getting your heart behind something. It's a project like these guys are doing and really having ownership to really be able to grow your business, to be able to give back to your community. And now you're making generational wealth. And, you know, Jaylen Brown, a friend of mine, is doing something called City Is Mine, where he's creating black wealth, and he's taking a bunch of different NBA guys who are max contracts, and each one in the city is creating this opportunities, but with ownership, right? They're not chasing checks. They're trying to get ownership and then giving back, so.
But this was magical, and we really wanted to honor the moment where we have these masters in front of you who have changed culture, they've influenced the way we dress, the way we speak, how we build community, how we feel about being in the world. That's what creativity does. So we want to honor that and recognize this moment. So we're not gonna let these guys go yet. We wanna make sure that you have an opportunity to engage with them while they're here and ask any questions. You may have been sitting there burning, because they share so much with you. Livana, thank you for sharing your personal story. Sharing that vulnerability. They've all shared so much. So, as I'm speaking, be thinking of your questions. I think, where's Mark? Mark has the mic. He's gonna come.
Alex got it.
Oh, Alex got it. There you go. Okay. So we want to get you on the mic because we want everybody to hear what your question is. So be bold, raise your hand, and we're gonna take a couple questions. Looks like the first one's right here.
Is Corrupt still here?
No.
Okay.
Okay. Here, I'll stand up. Hey, thank you, everybody. So what I love about the conversation that you had is really talking about the difference between individualism and community and individualism and the importance of institution building. So especially with all the things that you all are building, who are you looking at to partner with when it comes to institution building so that it really is a community thing as opposed to people creating in silos?
We look at institutions, corporations, organizations that are aligned with our principles. For example, we've done a lot with, let's say, Red Bull, you know, because I've had great experiences with Red Bull and their investment into the dance community, and I've seen them really take some legends around the world and treat them with tend to be decent. And so for us, it's always King Tech and myself, we have to have the alignment and principle, and then also activity. All things we do are to give back now. So why are we doing it? What is the purpose? And then who could benefit from it? How does it land in the community? How does it resonate in the community? What does a community walk away with from whatever project, program, or event that we're doing? We're very fortunate that we got to the point where we could make those decisions and we don't have to just accept any partnership. It's never been based on the financial gain, but it's always been based on the end result and how it impacts others.
So with the legends, what's up with the guys? My name is Jordan Gomes, a.k.a. Stunnerman 02.
Thanks, my brother.
Good to see you, man. What's up, y'all? Come on, man.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm from, born and raised in the city, Frisco. I'm happy to have y'all come here. This major to me because, you know, I grew up on y'all, you feel me? One thing I want to ask is, what is something from y'all generation that we could bring forward and innovate in a contemporary time? I got another follow-up, too. If you was to talk to...
Two parts.
Yeah, let me get the double. That's why I'm Stunner Man 02, you feel me? I got to double up. My last one is, if you was to talk to yourself, when you was, y'all still active, but when you was active figuring it out, what would you tell yourself with the knowledge that you got and the knowledge that's currently being innovated and currently being used, if you was to talk to yourself right now? Or yourself coming up?
Good questions, bro. The first question is part one. I think what the older generation in any genre would want the younger generation to do that is just study what came before you. You know what I mean? To know where it came from is also, you know, creative information as well. I think the only thing older MCs, not saying that I'm old or nothing, you know what I mean? But like the only thing we can ask for, man, is just that y'all know what we was trying to do, what we went through to make this happen. You know, who we are, you know, who started it, who was pivotal with it. You know what I mean? It's good to know what you get involved with. So, you know, that's number one. Part two, I think, and it will be a little cocky with this one, man, I think what I would tell my younger self is keep doing what you're doing, because years from now, they're going to figure out what you were saying.
Word up.
Amazing. I got one more question over here. We got the legendary Mixmaster Mike from the BC Boys, Invisible Scratch Pickles. He wants to ask a question.
Whoa, Mike, what up?
What up, Sway?
Hey. Yo, send that man up. That's a legend right there, man. It's Mixmaster Mike. Come on, man. My God.
And Sway got the fucking answers.
Hey.
Motherfucking answers. But yeah. Peace to Rakim the God. I mean, beyond the fuck shit and propaganda that's being fed to society, I mean, what's your point of view on the current state of hip-hop? And is there anything that invigorates you as an artist these days, like, I mean, out there? Or do you have to dig in within and pull that out?
I think right now, you know, hip hop is, I think we at a point now, it's like a four in a row, everybody realizing, you know, the next term is pivotal, especially the artists. You know, we've seen a lot of, you know, MCs make decisions that, you know, basically can end their career. More importantly, I think we at a point where we want to try to get back to, you know, I don't know if the word is substance, I don't know if the word is, you know, could be just hip hop. But I think we had a role, man. I think everybody realized that, you know, the listener kind of, you know, is forcing the artists to give them what they need instead of what we, you know, think they want. So, you know, I think that's where we at now.
Word, that's what's up. And everybody needs to take note that, you know, the Gen Z society and Kendrick Lamar said all his residuals on Chains and Whips, he said all his residuals should go to Rakim. And I applaud that. That Kendrick took notice of our God Rakim and said half of his residuals should go to him. So everybody should take note of that. And that's the beauty of it. Right? Big up to K Dot. Big up to K Dot.
Do we got one more? We got one guy right here. He stepped up. He actually walked up. Okay.
Hey, I've been knowing Uncle Al for a long time. How y'all doing today? I'm gonna ask a couple of questions. It's gonna be deep, but for those who I went to the same school he went to, so you know I got some tough questions, right? Hey, boy. And he mentioned Kendrick, right? Who mentioned Kendrick? Like, I was talking about, I got some friends, they're 7'6 East Coast Crips, right? And some bounty hunters and all that. And when Kendrick is doing what he's doing, and then I turn on Instagram and I see white people Crip walking. And I see white people, you know, Hoover stomping. There's a culture there that's black culture. And so my question is, how do you guys see? Because if you look at AI, to me, black genius, is because we are able to make nothing when we had no technology. That is important for us not to forget. And so how do we not allow AI and technology to continue to have people who are non-black monetized on our culture and it's not given back to our culture to rebuild us who they are taking from the culture?
That's what we was trying to insinuate on earlier. Don't let the technology run you. You run the technology, you know what I mean? We don't want little kids going out telling the AI to write their rhyme. You know what I mean? We don't want little kids doing that. You know?
Yeah, because AI is just that soulless homie that's just sitting there with an opinion, right? And we can't rely on him.
But let me
fuck that.
You know, the difference between, well, I use myself as an example. The difference between me and AI ain't grow up in the neighborhood amongst us. You know what I mean? AI is smart because it's, you know, but it don't feel, it don't see, it don't hear. You know what I mean? It don't resonate. It don't receive energy and give it back in a certain way. You know what I mean? So, again, we don't want AI writing rhymes. We don't want AI to tell you, you know, how to write a rhyme or even judge a rhyme. We just want to use the technology. Like, for instance, what we doing, if I can be quick, what we doing with our technology, AI is doing nothing but you tell AI how much money you make. You tell AI how long you've been making that money. You tell AI what you've been doing, how you work, and things like that. And our system will make a format or they'll draw up a plan. But now you're able to, you know, get money according to how, you know, you make your money instead of the old, you know, do you have credit system. We're basing the system on what you do now, how much money you made for the last year, how much money you make, how consistent you are. And then AI will set something up just for you and, you know, basically an account, you know what I mean? So we're only using it for, you know, monetary reasons. If we can get the smartest answer, you know, then maybe AI can help in that, but it, you know, it can't tell you, you know, how to write the best rhyme. So, you know, we know, you know, the difference between, you know, technology and creative process.
One thing I'll say before you go to the next question, and this is why I started off with that history. If we don't own our history, which is the equivalent to owning our genius, then we're going to be fascinated when somebody does something that we basically created. You see what I'm saying? And if we're doing the shortcut, which I think Rakim is getting at, then we lose our imagination. So it used to be that by the time somebody was doing the Crip Walk, just using that as an example, we was on to the next thing, right? And it was very noticeable. What we haven't done is build institutions around the things that we create, which we now have the opportunity to do that because we have enough history to see what has happened in the past. So I'm not going to fret if I see somebody doing something that we culturally did. Our job is to take it to the next level. And if I can quote you from the song New York, New York, high-tech dialect you ain't even catch yet. We got to be on that page consistently, but also like the beboppers, which you know, John Coltrane is what he said his rhyme is based on. They were playing those notes, knowing that people would watch, but wouldn't be able to fully understand what they were doing. Too many of us really want to give like the whole enchilada to, you know, the whole recipe to folks who don't even appreciate us. You feel what I'm saying? Let me repeat that. We're giving the recipe to people who don't appreciate us. And we can't do that. Give them your B-level game and get paid. Give them your C-level game, but you keep your A-level for your crew. And that's how we can, you know, you can't avoid people copying you. What you can avoid is people taking the best of you and then shitting on you and acting like you didn't do it.
Can I say something? We got DJ Q-Bert, one of the greatest of all time in the building, from the Bay Area. Stand up, Q-Bert, man. Come on, man.
Q-Bert was good.
Wow.
Q.
Wow. Come on. And then I want to say to Stunner Man, because congratulations on all your success. From Big Steppin', Like Kirk, all these different bangers you got. And we from the same cloth, and I've seen a lot. I've seen a lot, right, with this kind of momentum you have. To your question, if it was something I could say is to your generation, is self-preservation. Preserving yourself, not allowing yourself to fall into traps, not doing haphazard things with your life right now, and then also investing in the people around you so you ain't coming up alone. Bring your whoever's tight and who's ready. If they ain't ready, don't be afraid to leave them where they are, right? Because they not everybody can't go. But you got it, bro. And so the only thing that would take you off of it is you, because the only thing that brought you here is you, right? And God, right? So I will say that to you, bro.
Stunner Man 02.
And the people around you. If they not in your best interest, then don't be around them.